Good evening. I want you to bear with me a little bit. This may not seem like it's on topic since Bill announced my topic, but it's on topic, rest assured. There was a day, not so long ago, or at least in my mind it wasn't quite so long ago, that I was able to lift quite a bit of weight. I thought I was quite the man. I could lift, I felt like, a lot of weight. Now, I want you to know, you probably can't tell through the suit, but some of it's still there, but not all of it. I wasn't born super strong. It was a process. It started with smaller amounts of weight. And if I suspect that this group up here that happens to be male, maybe you all have gone through this same process, and maybe some of you have in the past, but you start with a small amount of weight, and you slowly add to it. And eventually you find yourself maxing out. That's the maximum amount of weight that you can lift. And the more you lift, as you continue to lift weight, the more and more weight you lift, the maximum amount of weight that you're able to lift continually and gradually increases. And I think in many ways, it reminds me of the verse that the theme of this meeting has been based on in 2 Peter, the first chapter, the first few verses there, or verses 5 through 7, but also for this very reason, give all diligence to add to your virtue, or to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control, perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness love. Each of these attributes is like one additional weight that you slide onto the bar. It's that, boy, you're pumping some iron there. It's one additional weight. Now, I know that it also may be hard to believe, but I can't lift as much weight as what I used to. And I always wondered, how did that happen? How is it that I can't lift as much weight as I used to? Well, quite frankly, it's because I stopped lifting weights on a regular basis. Now, that might be a little bit deceiving, the word regular there, because regular might imply that I do it with some frequency. But that hasn't happened. In fact, I actually can remember the last time I lifted weights. And since all of my brothers are here, I thought I would remind them of the last time I lifted weights. As you can imagine, Jeremy wasn't present, I don't think. I don't think it would have mattered anyway. I don't think so. My recollection, maybe this is part of the problem, but my recollection is that it was a weightlifting contest that I won. And now Jeremy recalling it differently maybe changes the way the sad part, regardless of who won, relative to me, I could only lift 80% of what I used to be able to lift. And I still view myself as a relatively young man. 80%. That's pretty sad. Well, why was it that I wasn't able to lift as much as what I once was able to? Well, it's exactly what you would think. I stopped working out. I stopped lifting weights. I hadn't maintained my weightlifting. It just wasn't something that I had done. And as a result, what happened? I lost. I started to lose. Now, I suspect that when Jeremy wrote me the letter about this particular topic, he wasn't thinking that I would talk about weightlifting. And I can just see my dad thinking, well, just remind everybody about 1 Timothy 4 and 8, for bodily exercise profits little. And really, that's not a joke, because what does the rest of the verse say? But godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of life that now is and of that which is to come. You see, this evening, the lesson that I've been asked to consider is on the subject of maintaining our obtained like precious faith. That idea of maintaining something that you've gained. And if you're out of high school, you probably can think of something that you used to have that you don't have anymore. Maybe it's strength. Maybe it's your memory. Maybe it's speed. Maybe it's something else. But as we grow older, our bodies start to deteriorate. And as a result, those things that we had gained, we start to lose those things. But yet spiritually, that's not the way we should be. As we get older, we ought to be growing. We ought to be maintaining, or really what I think we ought to be doing is growing in our obtained like precious faith. So this evening we're going to consider a couple of questions, a couple of topics. We're first going to address the issue of, is all faith the same? Then we'll look at, is faith once obtained always retained? And then we're going to take a look at a couple of practical habits of maintaining and growing our faith. I'm going to give you a roadmap of where we're headed. Is all faith the same? Is faith once obtained always retained? And practical habits of maintaining and growing our faith. So let's look at that first question. Is all faith the same? And I really struggle with how to answer this, and so I'm going to ride the fence a little bit. I'm going to say yes and no. But let me explain what I mean with that. As I see it, the Bible describes faith in two very distinct ways. There's the faith that we see described in Jude, verse 3. Here, this faith, it says, "Beloved, while I was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation, I find it necessary to write to you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith, which was once delivered to all the saints." You see, the faith, in answering this question, is all faith the same? When we talk about the faith, the answer is absolutely yes. You see, the faith is the doctrine of Christ delivered to us by Jesus, by the apostles, and the other writers of the New Testament. Not only what you believe, but how you put those things, those beliefs into practice. The world would have us believe that there are many different faiths. Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, etc., etc. The idea here, the implication, is that all of these faiths, although they are different, in some way they're all equal. You know, this idea of different strokes for different folks. I bet our young people are going to experience that far more than what you and I may have experienced as we grew up. That, well, all paths lead to the same God. And it used to be that we could say that of what the world termed Christianity. That, oh, well, you're a Christian, you're just a Baptist, or you're just a Catholic, or you're something else. And then there's these outside religions, and they're just off track. Well, now we're seeing a concerted effort to include all of these outside faiths. And although they're different, yet they're all equal in some ways. That's the thinking of the world. The Bible doesn't describe it this way. The Bible, in the New Testament, says there is the faith. Ephesians, the fourth chapter, verses 4 through 6, you know this. There is one body and one spirit, just as you were called, in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. See, there isn't a collection of faiths that are all different yet and somehow equal, all making it to the same point. No, there is one faith. There is one faith. Everything else that's not this only one faith, everything else is counterfeit. It's a fraud. It's false. It's not the faith. Now, how do you know what a counterfeit is? Well, you don't study all of the counterfeits. You study what's real. You don't need to know what every single fake $100 bill looks like. You just need to study the real $100 bill. And then when you come across something that doesn't match, then you know that it's counterfeit. And likewise, we need to do the same thing with faith. There is one faith. There is the faith. Everything else is counterfeit. There's a movement in the United States to integrate all religious beliefs. And we see this a lot, don't we? We see intra-faith organizations. We see speaker exchanges, one denomination bringing a speaker from another denomination in to help better understand that denomination. Joint fellowship activities. These are things that we ought to avoid. This has no place in the Church of Christ. There's no faith in this. It has no place in the one faith. Let me remind you of what Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, the 14th verse. "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness?" I want you to consider, if you have that opportunity, what's your motive? Is your motive to feel integrated in society? Because that is the motive of the folks generally who are putting these things on. Well, we need to have one common brotherhood of man. That happened once in time, didn't it? It happened during the Tower of Babel, and look what happened. They put God aside to try and make a name for themselves. You see, these intra-faith movements, this idea of all faiths being on some level equal, that's really just bogus as far as God's concerned. To God, there is one faith, and we must all share in this one faith. Peter describes it in 2 Peter, the first chapter, the first verse. Simon Peter, a bondservant of the apostle Jesus Christ. Simon Peter, a bondservant and apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who have obtained like precious faith with us by the righteousness of our God and Savior Jesus Christ. Like precious faith. Jude describes it in Jude verse 3 as our common salvation. Beloved, while I write it, was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation. And then goes on to tell you to earnestly contend for the faith. We must hold this faith, this one faith, without wavering, without changing. Paul reminds us in 1 Corinthians 16:13, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. That's such a great verse. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. So that in the end we can, like Paul said in 2 Timothy the 4th chapter, verse 7, say, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. You see, so in answering this question about are all faiths the same, we can look to the Scriptures and say there is just one faith, and we ought to all have that one faith. But yet individually, the Bible also speaks about our faith. And this can differ. This is not the same in all Christians. It is of different strengths. Jesus, on numerous occasions, described those, oftentimes his own apostles, as being those of little faith. In Romans, the 14th chapter, the first verse, we're told, receive one who is weak in the faith, but not to disputes over doubtful things. James chapter 2, verse 17, thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. James talks about a dead faith. I don't know that any of these are real positive. I don't think I want any of these faiths. The apostles didn't want those faiths either. That strength of faith. They wanted a measure of faith much stronger than that. If you recall in Luke chapter 17, verse 5, after Jesus had taught the apostles about forgiveness, that the apostles said in verse 5, increase our faith. You see, individually, our faith can vary. And what I mean by that is the strength of our faith, the measure of our faith, the magnitude of our faith can change. Recall Romans chapter 12, verse 3. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. See, we have a measure of faith. But our faith does not and should not stay the same. Consider 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 3. Paul, in his introduction to the Thessalonians, says this, we are bound to thank God always for you, brethren, as it is fitting, because your faith has grown exceedingly, and the love of every one of you all abounds towards each other. You see, Paul commends the Thessalonians. Why? Because their faith had grown exceedingly. And if you recall, the Thessalonians, it wasn't really an easy situation for them, yet their faith grew. And likewise, our faith should grow too. Right before I came up here, right before the prayer, I get a little tug on my sleeve. And it was from Reese, my three-year-old. And she needed to use the facilities. And as three-year-olds often do, sometimes she doesn't tug on your sleeve. Sometimes she kind of dances around. If you've had children, maybe your children have done that. And usually someone goes with her. And I think Emily got up and went with her. Now, you know what? That's completely acceptable for a three-year-old, isn't it? I mean, that's all right. No, it's no big deal that a three-year-old sometimes can't stop what they're doing to use the restroom, that they're